I'll watch me some Buffy, if you know what I'm saying.
That's so different, though.
It's not.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
It's literally a hell portal in their school, and they're fighting evil and all kinds of supernatural stuff.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan.
And this is episode 128, and we are recording on the eve of Nolan's birthday.
Yay.
Yay.
Hey, Dustin.
Yeah?
Before you got on to record, Kenny did not tell me happy birthday.
Well, I did.
Because he forgot. He didn't said, keep up with these things.
He said, told him happy
do you
birthday.
Feel older? And I said, no.
No, I didn't say
and that's
older.
All he's, that's, that was the conversation.
I said, do you feel old? And then we had a conversation about age.
Can he say something nice?
Well, I say nice things to him all the time. I'm very happy for his birthday, and I'm happy he's alive because he's a wonderful human being. Aww. And I'm happy that I know what he's planning to do at least partially for his birthday, and it's going to be awesome.
Thank you, Kim.
We are happy it's your birthday. We're glad that we get to spend a little bit of time with you on your birthday. In other news, we speculated, we heard the rumors, and we read the leaks, and it's finally been announced, coming September 21st on the Xbox One and PS4, and I'm sure later on the Switch and other things, will be a complete remaster of the original three Spyro games. Spyro the Dragon, Spyro Whoa. 2, Ripto's Rage, and Spyro Year of the Dragon.
Big news. I didn't know that.
I can dig it.
On
just
PS4?
Yesterday.
I want to play it in VR, though.
Newer consoles from Xbox and PlayStation. I don't know if you guys remember, but many months back, we were talking about the success of the Crash Bandicoot remaster.
Oh,
and
yeah.
On the podcast, we wondered if it would lead to a remaster of Spyro.
Wow. Look
we
at
did.
Us. We kind of know game
and,
stuff.
And in that time, they developed the game.
They heard
me. I feel like you us. Don't mean that.
I'm not going to play it. I mean...
Kenny?
What?
I mean, here's the thing. Probably neither of us three will, but if you watch the video, actually, it looks really, really good.
Dang,
and I liked it. Y'all didn't end up giving the poor little purple dragon a New Game Plus
we don't
status.
Don't talk about that.
That's one of the rough patches of New Game Plus.
I know. I would play it, but... My PS4 has been boxed up for a while now. Like, I'd have to get it out, plug
All
it
right.
in.
So 9 months later, it comes out on Switch. What do you? I'm making this up. What do you
and it's free.
And it's free? Shut up.
Uh-huh.
I still don't. I don't. It's going to be at least $40, so I played the original. Ugh.
Well, I said it was free.
This is
You
not...
don't get to make that decision, Kenny.
Sure I do. It's a hypothetical.
I still wouldn't make the time to play it. I'm sorry.
He's taking the hype out of my hypothetical.
And Kenny's not going to play it. He doesn't really play video games.
Don't ever say hypothetical again.
Did I ever ruin that word for
yes,
you?
Yes, yes.
Whether or not I end up playing it, I'm excited for a new generation of gamers to get to meet the cute, cocky, mischievous dragon. Cute, cocky, mischievous. That sounds a lot like our main character, Dante, in our retro game of the week. Cute, cocky, mischievous. Devil May Cry.
Overview.
Devil May Cry. It is a PlayStation 2 title.
That's recent.
It does feel really weird, huh? We've only had a few of these types of games, if any, that are this recent. Came out
in
2001.
Halo was really recent, but I think this is the most recent.
Yeah.
Maybe.
The only other PS2 title that we've played that I recall is what's his face?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's great.
No, where he shoots people and it's real like LA noir style.
Oh. Well, that wasn't PS2, that was PC.
What's that game called?
Max Payne.
Red Dead Redemption.
Max Payne. Yeah, Max Payne. Max Payne came out on PS2, didn't it? I know it did.
I don't know. Anyways, the game came out in 2001. It was developed and published by Capcom. Whoa, I've heard of them. Yes, you have. Street Fighter, Resident Evil, Mega Man, others. A lot of big games. Really big company.
Mario.
No.
Nope.
Link to the Past.
Yes. That one. No. I couldn't think of it. So Devil May Cry is an interesting IP by Capcom. So it started out, the project started out as a part of the Resident Evil series. It was going to be Resident Evil 4 at the time. That's when they were creating this, and it was going to be like a new, as most Resident Evil games are, a new plot line in that world. Well, it ended up not being that at all and turned a really sharp corner to like this demon slaying type of
game. I'm going to say, you say sharp corner. It's not like it's that far off. You can see that it originated there and it makes sense.
Well, I'm talking thematically mostly. Like Resident Evil, sure, is far-fetched and about the undead and killing zombies and stuff. But Devil May Cry is more demonic and more edgy and emo and really fit, in my mind, fit the time, like 2001, like, I don't know, emo bands, hardcore bands, like people being edgy in high school. I don't know.
It is, but I'll argue in this episode that I think the bad of Devil May Cry came from the Resident Evil franchise, and the good is the unique things that Devil May Cry begins.
Whoa.
And, I mean, we'll have to see how that works itself out, but I do think, I really felt the bad things come from Resident Evil here.
I would keep that in mind. That's your thought. I'll keep that in mind going forward because that's interesting. So that's how Devil May Cry originated. Well, they decided, let's make this its own series, and it spun a series. Like there's Devil May Cry 1, 2, 3, 4, a remake, another one that's like in a different plot or universe. Like it's got a lot of games, even some recent ones too. The basic plot of the game is you play as this character named Dante, who is...
Sorry, I'm going to laugh as you're telling this, because this game's so ridiculous.
Just bear with me here.
It's one of the worst introductions.
Oh my goodness, we have to talk about this intro sequence. It's terrible.
And the voiceover, Devil May Cry.
Devil May Cry. That girl's voice, like... It's just so
my wife does
perfect.
It so good, and she's been doing it all week long.
That's so good. I'm getting ahead of myself, actually. So the game starts out by introducing some backstory, some lore to this world. And there was this demon lord named Sparta that rebelled against the underworld for the sake of humanity, because he wanted to save humans and he saw the good in them. He was
a
good
nice demon.
He was a nice demon.
Yeah,
he
but like your rebellion leader being named Sparta.
I mean,
come on.
With the
but
D,
it's S-P-A-R-D.
It's duh.
Oh yeah, it's clearly not any kind of play.
Much cooler. So he rebels, defeats Mundus, who is the like evil demon, which,
evil incarnate. Yeah.
Yes. And like seals the gateway between the two realms, saving humans, whatever. So that's the lore. You play as Dante, who is apparently his Sparta's son.
Now we know why he liked humanity, because he was off getting jiggy with it, knocked
with
somebody
a human
up.
Woman, yeah. That's
and then
actually fair.
Felt obligated.
That's canon.
Wow. Yeah. Baby daddy saves humanity in this case.
That should be the title of the game. So Dante is this edgelord, very anime picture. He's got white hair in his face, red long cloak, very memorable character in my opinion. I knew of this character. I knew of the game before even playing it back in the day. Wields two pistols named Ebony and Ivory. Has a big sword, obviously, and it's a hack and slash game. That's how you get through the game. So you're Dante, your mother was killed, your brother was killed, and you are out to get revenge.
Yeah, you're a private investigator by day and a demon hunter by night, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, who isn't? So you're trying to get revenge because of your family, and this girl Trish shows up, and the most ridiculous intro sequence of all time
just
starts
ramming through your front door
with a motorcycle, runs through his private eye office, which is called Devil May Cry.
like stabs you to death and then is like, just kidding, we have a mission to do.
Yeah,
like, tries to kill you, but then tries to tell you that she's actually there as your friend and that the killing you is just a test. After he, okay, get this. He not only is able to stand up and just pull a sword out of his chest with his bare hands, like it's no big deal.
Yeah.
But when she throws a motorcycle at him, he stops the motorcycle by shooting it in midair.
But over and over and over again. It's a powerful
really fast.
Gun,
yeah.
It's one of the most ridiculous things.
It's great. You should, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, go to YouTube and watch it. It's worth it.
To be funny, but here's the thing. That turned me off immediately, and so the game started
did exactly the same for me.
Negative foot to me. Like, if I wouldn't have seen that, it would have started off a lot better, but it had to redeem itself after that.
That's really fair.
I rolled my eyes so far back in my head that I didn't know if they could make it back forward to actually watch the rest of the gameplay.
That's fair, but I knew what I was getting into. I knew the story wasn't going to capture me necessarily.
Can we talk about her outfit?
I mean, it's revealing what
she's showing. Not even. It's like cut open and then it somehow still stays on. And then it's terrible, like graph. I don't know. It was just,
she's
it was
showing
really rough.
her little devils.
Uh huh. And then her there hair that's just like a single piece of like chunk.
It's called
I don't even
product,
know.
Kenny. You ever heard of it?
Good thing is that you don't see her again for a while. You get to play the game without her having to deal with her.
Her name's Trish, good. By the way. And she's pretty important to this crazy plot. But that's the setup for the game. And then you're thrown into this world as Dante hack and slash and demons left and right.
Gameplay.
All right, as we go into gameplay, I just want to make sure that you guys have your eyeliner on. You've been to Hot Topic recently, studded belts.
Yeah. All those things are checked
out. I actually have a sword lodged in my chest, and I'm going to pull it out in a second.
Yeah, that's the new hip thing to do.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So this game was not what I expected. I'll say that from the start. It began like I was expecting it. So that intro that we had just talked about the last few minutes, that those opening cutscenes, I expected it to be that. So when I started seeing that, I was like, okay, exactly what I thought. But then immediately after the cutscenes and after the setup, we're dropped right outside of a castle. And you go into the castle and it takes you out of the game to give you a screen that says like something like begin first mission or whatever like that. And I slowly began to realize that it was mission, that the game is set up mission by mission, where you're inside a few rooms of this castle that is like a big puzzle, and you have to get certain keys and do certain defeat certain enemies and collect certain orbs to unlock certain doors to go through and find certain items. And so for each of these missions, it's all about doing that in a timely manner, in a really cool manner, and then getting graded for it and then going to the next mission. Totally unexpected for me.
For sure. Like, yeah, I go into a game like this thinking, okay, it's just going to be a button masher. It's probably going to be just giant, like a ton of waves of enemies. And I can't even envision how progression would work in a game like this. I was also super surprised. I had never played the game before. I just knew of it, but I only knew of its reputation, like story-wise and thematically. So when I was going in there and I was getting, collection and some puzzles and not as much combat as I was expecting, actually, at first.
At first.
I'm going to say, you say that.
It ramps up.
This is fully a hack and slash game.
Yes, but it lets you learn the mechanics before throwing you into battle.
Yeah, which I super appreciate. And again, wasn't expecting, but it is Capcom. I have to keep reminding myself that because like they would know how to do that.
So, Kenny, you did say it was hack and slash, and it is. I mean, it's iconically hack and slash. You're button mashing. But here's there's a few things that makes this game unique. One is that you're graded on style. And so you've seen this in more recent games to where so in this game, you can just hit the sword button over and over and over again, and you can probably pass it, but you're not going to pass it as successfully as you can if you're switching up your combat styles. You're literally at the end of each mission given a letter grade. So the lowest you can get is D and the highest you can get is S. And it's, so it's A, B, C, D, and then S is the top.
Yeah.
And based on your performance score, you are given a certain amount of orbs that's really just money or currency that you can then use to upgrade your character and your weapons at a later time. It was actually the first game to do something like this, I believe. Like, it's the first in a subgenre that became known as extreme combat.
Yeah, and you see spinoffs that do extreme combat even more extreme. But for kind of being the first to do this, I felt like it hit a kind of sweet spot of feeling a little bit puzzle-ish, a little bit hack and slash, but still with strategy. If you weren't paying attention to your positioning, if you weren't at least trying to kind of do moves to counter the boss that you were fighting, you were going to have a hard time. You had to still, I felt like at least, you had to still be engaged and try and think. And that was welcome. You also, and I think these sort of extreme type games tend to give you extreme type moves. I think it's also worth mentioning that early on as you jump into this game, you realize that your character can jump like nobody's business.
And double jump.
Double jump off a wall.
Yeah.
Right.
Later, you can actually double jump without a wall if you upgrade that. But yeah, so you can jump high, but then one of the things that you got to learn pretty early on so that you can get the orbs that you need is that you can jump off a wall and get super high, which allows you to get to different levels of the stage that you're on.
Which is helpful for exploration and sometimes helps in battle as well, depending on what you're trying to do. And later you get to where you can do some like jump attack sorts of moves and different things that utilize that. But I think the first level, as much as it was kind of a little bit of a puzzle, almost felt like weird video game parkour because it was just this big empty room and you were just jumping around figuring out how the game worked, and it was kind of ridiculous. But
yeah, and especially in that first area, it kind of breaks up some of the linear aspects of this game. Like, it's a pretty linear game when you're going through these missions, but the fact that it gives you that parkour-esque exploration at some points made it feel less dull, I guess, going through it.
We've got to talk a little bit more about the weapons. You mentioned early on that you've got a sword and you've got dual wielding pistols. But this is central to combat. It's really cool that you can flawlessly and very smoothly switch between your guns or your sword, even in battle with one guy. So a very iconic move here, and one that I did often, was that I would get a few sword slashes in and then kind of uppercut with my sword that causes the enemy to hover in the air for a second, giving me enough time to pull out my guns and keep him in the air a little bit more, kind of like with the motorcycle, Trish's motorcycle from the beginning, but to keep him in the air with my pistols.
Yeah, and you can also, you'll eventually get other weapons, and I use the shotgun so much.
Oh yeah, it's the sawed-off shotgun.
Yes, it was. Yeah. It's not like, it's more of a powerful hit, obviously, and slower. But like, they would get knocked back harder. Like, there's more hit stun, I guess you could call it, when you use it. And I loved using that one. But yeah, that combo you're talking about, Dustin. You can also do like uppercuts over and over and over if you want. It doesn't do a ton of damage, but it's cool looking, I guess.
You also get sword upgrades as well as weapon upgrades, which is welcome because they look cool and give you some new moves depending on what sword you're using, which is kind of fun. But I think the thing that impressed me most about it was the system that they used to implement. Dustin, you talked about how you could kind of go flawlessly between the two, but not only did like pulling up your gun force you to target, at least if you're playing in normal mode, not easy mode, but that same targeting could be used for your sword attacks. So there was actually this really kind of fluid, choose an enemy, target them if you want, instead of just a default attack, that gave you a lot of freedom for like standing and positioning and deciding who you were going to kill. And I say this like it's all weird analytical. It's not. It's very fast paced and you're just jumping all over trying to make sure you're not hit, because as much as if you're working offense well, it's keeping you pretty safe, if your guard is down for just a minute and you take some damage because you're not standing or moving carefully, you get hit pretty hard.
Yeah, I had a couple moments, even in my first play this week, where I was like, I wasn't really paying attention. I thought I was doing a lot by, you know, hacking and slashing. But then I looked at my health and I was like, oh, I'm almost dead. So I had to start playing smarter as you progress because it does get more challenging.
Thankfully, there are some collectibles on the stage. So I know that Nolan, in your first play, you used a health potion at one point. There's some other things that help revive you if you get knocked out. So you can get some items throughout the game for sustainability purposes. But depending on the level of difficulty that you play is going to obviously either make the game difficult or a little bit less difficult. So the cool thing is the first mission is kind of a tutorial slash trial. I took way too long to complete it. So Nolan, I think you completed it in like 13 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, something like that.
I completed it in 22 minutes. And as soon as I did, I got rank D, lowest you could get. And then a big screen comes up and says, would you like to switch to easy automatic mode?
Oh.
Like, just so disgraceful.
Shame.
And I clicked yes, but it changes it because then not only does it make the game easier, but you don't have to... you don't have to know some of the button configurations and like hit styles and different, all of the things that you do to try to switch up your arsenal of attacks. It kind of does that automatically.
So you kept it that way? You played on easy this week?
I did, yes.
I just feel like normally I'm the one who it might need a crutch, and I didn't do that this time, and I didn't feel like the game was impossible still, so that was nice. I just was better at this game than I think I expected to be, and that's a nice change of pace.
So just really quick while you mentioned it, help me on how they go about grading you. Like, is it the timing of your attacks? Because, like, it tells you when you hit, like in a fighting game, it's like cool, dull. Like, it gives you a little...
Yes, so it's a couple of things. It's I don't think it's mainly timing. I think it's a chaining things together and non-consecutive kinds of things.
Variety.
And then not getting hit for a long time in a row.
That's actually super unique.
Yeah, so it's effective, like, positioning and mobility so that you're not getting hit. And then chaining of different combos that are working, you know, not things that are getting blocked, which means you're paying attention to what the enemies are doing and using the correct attacks and flowing from one to another effectively.
That's actually kind of cool. I can't think of many games that encourage you to like use your arsenal of attacks. Usually I just stick to one.
At least in this era, I feel like it's something that got adopted occasionally, not in exactly the same way, but it at least to me feels like it's novel and originated here. I could be wrong. They could be knocking off something else and I just am not aware, but it feels like a really unique, good mechanic.
And I felt that the combat felt good. Like, I felt like I was doing some pretty cool things by...
Absolutely.
Controlling Dante, and it was just so much fun to be able to... Like, I wasn't even worried about the cool and Bravo and Dull, the meter. I mean, the more that I would play it, the more I'd try to focus on it. But I just tried to really switch it up and really enjoy switching between gun and sword and jump and then come down hard with the sword and just doing all... Like, being able to just explore the variety of moves that Dante has was what a lot of the fun was to me. And it felt really natural, and then you felt really powerful when you did it well.
Yeah, it was fluid and it picked up easily and was really engaging. I think the combat piece of this game is one of the things that they did the best.
So that's the combat element, and there's still a little we could talk about with like maybe some boss fights. But the way you go through these stages is very similar to Resident Evil in my mind. And I can definitely see how this game started out as a Resident Evil game. And Dustin, you mentioned that was actually something that distracted you. I'd like to hear, like, why that was the case. So when I say Resident Evil style progression or whatever, it's like you walk up to a statue and you talk to it, and then it's like, oh, you see the statue holding a key. Do you take it? Yes or no? And yes. And then it goes into your inventory. And that's kind of how you you go through the stage, the camera angle will shift. Like, depending on where you walk through the castle, you'll have a different camera angle.
There's a few things that I feel like was completely Resident Evil. The grabbing items and then going and using elsewhere, that's not the thing that bothers me at all. So the main Resident Evil-esque things that bothered me was kind of the director style camera that I felt was very unintuitive. And then the thematic, this emo dark demon thing has never done it for me in any game that we play. Resident Evil probably does it for me more so than some of the others because it's a little bit less focused on this.
Yeah.
But this game, as you mentioned at the start, takes, you know, the demon dark thing and then multiplies it by 10.
And isn't afraid to be ridiculous.
Oh, no, but... But I don't think it's self-aware either. Like, it doesn't feel...
No, it's not. Like, it's trying to be serious, and yet it's so bad that in moments that it's funny.
Yeah.
Like, I laughed about... And this isn't just, like, thematically how it did it. It was just how ridiculous the game is. But I laughed at him, like, pulling a sword out of his own chest in the opening sequence. And, like, sure, that's ridiculous. If your character's super overpowered and you're trying to show that he's not just a normal human... Yeah, I get it. I guess it makes sense. But I almost lost my mind when later he gets impaled by a sword.
Stuck
to the ground.
That is one of the best things that happened.
Yeah. Giant sword with a giant handle. Okay, like huge. The handle and the little sword guard. And then he just rises up off of the sword. I'm not talking off the pointy end. He's right. Impaled to the ground and his body just moves over the handle and he just raises up like there's nothing in the way.
Yes, I don't know if you're getting the full picture, guys.
No.
Like up the blade, but then the full hilt and everything just ripping through
he's
him
going
and out
through
his back.
His like stomach, chest, rib cage like he's a ghost, but he's not, or like the sword isn't even there. Oh my goodness.
What do you think, Nolan?
I think the developers, when making that cutscene, they didn't think about the hilt and they were animating him rising and they're like, oh, just keep going. Just keep going.
I think honestly, so none of us are huge Devil May Cry fans. We hadn't played the game before, I don't think, or at least much, and we hadn't played much in the series, but I think that this is actually a reoccurring thing. So whether they meant to do it from the beginning, I think in all of the games, this is kind of how he begins to get his devil trigger. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
It's how he gets his devil trigger when he gets stabbed through the chest with a blade.
It's convenient.
And there's a few blades in the game that are actually devil arms. I think that's what they're called. And give him the ability to do this devil trigger limit break type mode. This first sword that we're talking about right now allows him to kind of harness the power of Alastor. It's the demon that the sword is named after.
You know, Link opens a chest, picks up the sword. This guy's got to get stabbed by it and then stand up.
It's just
so ridiculous.
Okay, so those are the elements that you got hung up on. I actually kind of like the director's camera angles.
Did you?
Yeah, and it frustrated me at first, but I got used to it pretty quickly. And hang on a sec, those are kind of used in Final Fantasies, you know, like 7 and 8. They make use of that. It's a little less annoying because it's zoomed out more, but like that's a thing in those games.
Yeah. In 8, at least, you can still swivel your camera. Can you?
Oh, okay.
I feel like having some amount of control is needed at places because, I don't know, I guess if you're going to do it this way, it has to be done so flawlessly that you can see every puzzle, that you're not having to look for hidden areas or areas to jump that aren't visible otherwise. Like the list goes on in terms of actual gameplay ramifications of doing a free camera or a stuck, you know, pre-programmed camera. And to some degree, it's probably easier to do it this way, but it certainly feels a lot more limiting. And it got a little frustrating for me as well.
The cool parts about it, like at one part, I think it's in the third mission, you're going up a tower and it's a spiral staircase, but it's rectangular. It's not a spiral exactly. And the camera I don't know, just the way it kind of follows you up, it slowly tilts up and up and up was kind of cool. And to me, it's the familiarity of it. Like, it feels very Capcom. I kind of have always appreciated the novelty of it in the Resident Evil games. So I think it was just something that I've grown to enjoy. So it's probably just a preference.
I never got used to it. And time again, I'd be holding up to go a certain direction. The camera would shift. And then me holding up would cause me to go the opposite direction at that point. For me, it didn't feel comfortable. It didn't feel like it worked. I understand the reasoning behind it. But for me, as a personal thing, I didn't care.
That's fair.
And then, like I mentioned, thematics, like just the theme of this,
it's
never worked for me. Like, Do you like this kind of theme? Do either of you like favor this, or does it not bother you at all?
I don't prefer it, no. But I can tolerate it. Like, it's something I can get over.
What about you, Kenny?
For me, it totally depends on how it is done and tone. It can be really obnoxious and like quote unquote edgy for no reason, and that's the worst. But it can also be done well, and like, I'll watch me some Buffy, if you know what I'm saying.
That's so different, though.
It's not.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
It's not different at all. It's literally the same, like, it's a hell portal in their school, and they're fighting evil and all kinds of supernatural stuff. The only difference is tone and self-awareness and kind of how they go about
the chest. Is there swords in the chest?
And not the, like, kind of over-the-top anime, too strong, I'm serious, my daddy was
my
Sparta.
Daddy? Oh, no.
And, like, it just, it's a how you go about it. I think it's a dangerous thing to do because there's so many traps you can fall into that just make it really hard to do well. And so I'm not generally a fan, but I think it's more of a how than a what.
Aged.
So we already addressed the camera thing, and I think that's one of the major aging issues for today, that it doesn't that doesn't hold up well, or that's kind of foreign to a lot of games today. So we can talk about it more if we want to, but I will say here at the beginning of the age section that I think one of the things that absolutely stands the test of time is the handling of Dante. I haven't played an old game in recent months that I'm able to do exactly what I want to do with my character and feel very successful with that being such an old game. And maybe that's because the game is a lot newer than a lot of the old games we play, but it feels really good to finally play a game again where I feel like I'm in complete control of my character.
Have either of you ever played Soul Calibur? It's a fighting game with sword characters.
Some.
So, yeah, I agree, Dustin. Like, this at times, so you eventually fight this Black Knight that has a sword. I don't know who it is, but I felt like I was playing Soul Calibur in the middle of this game because, like, they pulled in, like, fighting game not mechanics, but just that fluidity of controlling a character into this game. And yeah, it lets you do some really creative stuff. And at times I would just get lost in, like, just fighting. It was really interesting to play a game that old and still feel good.
Let me just say it this way. It was so fluid that I was worried about my health and safety while playing it.
Explain, please.
Because it was like having mercury in your hand. It just was so crazy, slick, and fluid and natural.
That was awful.
That's but how good it was.
I'm fine with you being Kenny, and I think that I agree with you. I didn't feel sad for my health. Another thing that I felt aged really well. And I was really nervous about, especially during this era, was the graphics.
Yes,
I thought
thank
it
you.
Did fine.
Yeah, dude,
and,
it looks
and
great.
Did really well. Like, it could have been and probably should have been a little bit more blocky and polygonish than it was. But Capcom did so well with, whoever, the design team of making it to where it worked.
Dude.
And, like, even today, playing that first huge boss, that spider scorpion thing, was terrifying.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of these graphics. Very detailed. And that's actually why I kind of like that camera thing. And I'm not going to go back to that just really quick, though. Like, I felt like they were able to show off a lot of the really detailed and beautiful scenery in this castle. Like, I think the graphics aged so good.
I agree. The graphics were solid and everything looked good and it was clean. I'm still with Dustin on there were places that it was annoying with camera, but then there were places that the camera allowed them to do kind of artistic stuff by pulling to a long shot or, you know, framing a hallway or whatever. I will say that as much as everything looked nice, I at least thought that they did as equally good a job with setting the tone with how they handled music, but it was kind of heavy-handed. What did you guys think?
This is one of the games that I think added a lot by removing some soundtrack at times. So
absolutely,
the battles were epic, and the music was there and appropriate. I think it wasn't forgettable, but it wasn't extravagant. But like when you first enter the castle in that tutorial stage, you just hear footsteps echoing through the castle, Dante's footsteps, and just kind of a little bit of eerie music, very subtle. I love that. It's very atmospheric and really pulls me into a game, even if the tone is absolutely bonkers like this.
And I think that it's a little forgettable, which I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing. I do think it gives the proper ambiance, but I do recall, I think, that all of the casual battles, so the non-boss battles, it's the same track mm-hmm. over and over again, and so it kind of becomes repetitive after a while,
yeah,
in my opinion.
That's a good point.
Certainly, but it ramps up to give it energy at the right places and then is willing to fall off and let it just be back to exploration. And again, though it can feel a little forced to do that, you're kind of like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be feeling now. It wasn't like it was real subtle. I feel like it helped. Like I got hyped as I was going into boss battles or as music was jumping up that I knew something cool was around the corner. So I'm with you. I don't think it was anything like revolutionary, but it tied in with everything else they did well. And is welcome that it wasn't something that bothered me.
Well, with all of those things, wherever you land, I think they position them well so that you're focused on the gameplay. Like, I still felt like the highlight was me in control of Dante.
Gameplay, absolutely.
Fighting.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And so, like, those other two elements, while super important to me, and I actually enjoyed both in this case, I really felt like they were there, but like they were like, no, like play Dante and fight. And it just worked.
And here was the nice thing, and I mentioned this earlier, but not only did they ramp up the difficulty pretty naturally and give you a really nice learning curve where it's like, hey, just jump around, run around a little bit. Okay, deal with a few of these pretty simple puppets a little bit. Okay, now you've got to deal with some bigger groups and some bosses. But then they also continued to bring at what I felt like was pretty good variety in terms of bosses and enemies that did different kinds of things, where you weren't just doing the same thing on repeat with a different skin. You really were having to think about what you were doing, and it was still fast paced and frantic, and you were going from fight to fight to fight, but the creatures were new and different, at least in kind of perception, and it just felt really fluid.
If you are a fan of Devil May Cry, then you probably already know, but there is, and we mentioned it at the start, Devil May Cry 2, 3, 4, and some other games in there. A few years back, they did an HD collection of the first three games. And so they give you Devil May Cry, the game that we just played, but with kind of smoother and better graphics, which I think is a win and was pretty much received well there. There's a few titles in there. I don't know if it's one of those main titles. I do think it may have been the reboot that was kind of a letdown for a lot of fans, but the game and the series is very playable today, and you can get all of these, including Devil May Cry, fairly easily for playing today.
Yeah, they've been re-released on a couple of different platforms, and again, released in ways that help keep things up to date. Anytime a game was popular enough in the first place that it gets the quote-unquote HD re-release, it's a good sign that the game did well and was popular and had some kind of big sustained audience, because they're planning on making a little more money off of it. And though that shouldn't by any means be the only metric, it's one that I would say probably 90% of the time, if a game got a HD remake, it was probably a good game. And it's a good sign for me that it's one that we're going to like.
Spyro the Dragon.
Wow.
Full circle. I said 90%.
Oh, 10%. You are an ignoramus.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game receives our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Do we suggest that you find a copy and play this game, or reserve your retro video game time for a different retro game? Requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or another. Kenny, can we begin with you?
Yeah. Hack and slash isn't generally my go-to. And it's maybe not everybody's cup of tea. So any recommendation that I'm about to give it, and I am about to give it a recommendation, spoiler alert, maybe should be taken with a grain of salt. But being a genre I don't normally have like, I found that I ended up liking this game. It didn't happen at first. I started off really dreading it. I think my sequence kind of echoed some of the stuff you said, Dustin, where I was like, okay, really? This is going to be the worst. And then the more I played it, the more fun I had. And the gameplay fun nature outweighed all of the eye roll for me, and I ended up having a good time anyway. So New Game Plus for me.
I was very surprised by this game. So I've always been one that doesn't roll my eyes too hard and is just so dismissive about stuff like this. Like, I'm more of just like, okay, I accept it for what it is, even if it is silly and anime and whatever you want to call it. So it didn't turn me off when I saw that intro scene. It just made me laugh. But once I got control of Dante, I was sold and shocked that this game passed by my radar as a kid. I'm really glad that I played it this week. Just another quick thing that I really enjoyed about this game, it's easy to get into. Like, the missions aren't that long, at least most of them aren't. So dying isn't too punishing. It'll put you at the beginning of the mission, but it's like, okay, I know where to go now, I know what to do. I really appreciate that. Love the graphics, love the music. Not crazy about the characters, but the game's super fun. And I think people should play it. So New Game Plus.
That's two votes. For my vote, I'd just say that in my mind, I make it out to be a perfect mixture of Dark Souls, Final Fantasy VIII, and Resident Evil. I think if you take those three games, put them in a pot, mix it up and pour it out, and then maybe a little bit of Hot Topic, you get Devil May Cry. And because of some of those things, I was completely not expecting to like this game. Final Fantasy VIII is one of my least favorites. Dark Souls is kind of has got that demonic flair and kind of this environment of going from fighting one skeleton to the next. Resident Evil, again, the camera stuff. So that being said, I was not expecting to like this game. Devil May Cry was one of the biggest surprises for me in my NGP history. And with just a few days to play it, I just feel like I've just begun to scratch the surface with what this game has to offer. But in just scratching the surface, I pleasantly and thoroughly enjoyed the game. Enjoyed it, like almost every single element of it. And so I would definitely include it with my vote for New Game Plus status. And so all three of us gave it our thumbs up for New Game Plus status, meaning Devil May Cry is New Game Plus certified.
I think it's been a little while since we've been completely unanimous in giving a game NGP status. Maybe I'm misremembering, but it's been a while since we've at least all really loved a game as much as we seem to.
And I don't know about love. Still aesthetically, this game isn't for me, but I the gameplay, what Nolan and what we've all been harping on.
Like you had a lot of fun playing the game.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It felt really good.
I'm agreeing that it's not like perfect. Right.
Oh, sure.
But even with a bunch of flaws that made me scoff hard, I had a great time too. I don't think saying I loved it is overstating.
Yeah. I only hope that with their future installments, they continue to build on the good and shave off the bad. Because if so, then 2, 3, 4, those are going to be great, great titles. Yeah. Well, Devil May Cry does receive our vote for New Game Plus status. Find a copy, play it. Let us know what you think. We'd love to always include your thoughts as a part of our episode each and every week. Send your thoughts to ngppodcast@gmail.com and we'll read your commentary as a part of our show next week. Speaking of next week, it's time to randomly select our new retro video game. But instead of picking from our large retro master list, we're doing something different.
Boo.
Patreon pool?
I'm just kidding. I love Patreon pool weeks.
What's a Patreon pool? What are y'all talking
about? Let me tell you. So at the $5 level of our patrons on Patreon, you can submit two games that you would like us to play. And we take those submissions along with the other $5 patrons and we put it into a smaller pool compared to the humongous pool of other games. So you have a better chance of getting us to play a certain game.
So in this pool, we have games like E.T. for the Atari 2600.
Yes.
Why? We have the original Legend of Zelda. Whoa. We've got Star Fox Adventures, a couple of Golden Eyes, fingers crossed. And
Zelda 1? That's good. I hope that's chosen because that's humongous.
We also have Castle of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse. So
that's actually a good game.
If you guys can't tell from this or past episodes, sometimes our patrons use this power for good and sometimes they use it for evil. And totally up to them, I guess.
It's kind of like Dante, you know? All right, so now we are going to randomly select and find out what our next game is going to be for the glorious Patreon pool. All right, so this one's going to be interesting, guys.
Okay, hit me.
1995 and then 2017.
That's
what do these 2 years have in common?
Nothing.
Well, this game was first released for the Super Nintendo in 1995 and then had a release for the Nintendo Switch in 2017.
Huh.
Whoa. What game is this that was developed and published by Square? What?
I don't know.
Action role-playing video game.
I still don't know.
I like a little ARPG every once in a while.
I'm more familiar with its title outside of Japan, but the game that was submitted is a game from Japan called, I'm going to mess this up, Seiken Densetsu 3. The second game, its predecessor, was released in the States as Secret of Mana, which I'm more familiar with.
Yes. That's a very recent re-release. I remember when that was talked about.
I don't know. Was this game released in the States? This game wasn't released in the States. We're going to be playing our first completely foreign game, I believe.
Oh, really?
We're going to have to find a translated one.
I thought Secret of Mana was a here release. That's a later one in the series, and that's not the one we're playing.
No. Secret of Mana is Seiken Densetsu 2, and we're playing its sequel, Seiken Densetsu 3.
Oh, all right.
Thank you, Luciano, for suggesting in our Patreon pool this game. We're really looking forward to playing it and checking it out. It's going to be like one of those stereotypical but probably awesome JRPGs.
Heck yeah.
Luciano is also the one that shared with us this week in Discord that he is a part of a video game and anime music group who came out with a video game album a couple of years ago, and now they're recording right now their new album. They just put up a thing about all of this on Kickstarter. They're trying to raise money for it and even allowing some of their fans to pick the final song that they're going to remake and record. So it's really cool. You can go on Discord, find a link to that, and check out their group. It's a really, really cool orchestral group.
Such a good idea.
That's super fun.
Hey everyone, we have a Discord server that we would love for you to join us in. If you don't know, Discord is a chat program for gamers. So there's voice, text, and it's free. So go over to our Twitter, follow us, and while you're there, find an invite link to our Discord server and join us. We'll see you there.
Hey, we already said thanks to all of our patrons who submitted Patreon pool suggestions. You guys are great. But we love to highlight every episode just how much we especially appreciate our producer-level supporters, Bradley, Zion, and Gimbarino. You guys are awesome, and we love you.
Make sure to find us on social media this week, Facebook and or Twitter at NGP Podcast. You can find us on our YouTube channel where regular video content is released there. You can listen to us directly on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Music, any other podcast provider. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes, which are edited and produced by Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play the unofficial English fan translation of Seiken Densetsu 3. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Dante.
And this has been New Game Plus.